it's Marilyn. With me is Graham Brookman, a member of the Gawler Regional Natural Resource Centre, which is an organisation open to anyone in the community who is interested in sustainable living or the future of our natural resources. Graham is a keen gardener and runs a farm called the Food Forest here in Gawler. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Marilyn.
Good to have you here. Graham, when did your interest in gardening first begin?
Well, pretty early. I grew up in a big gardening family. My mum, my dad, my grandfather, all keen gardeners. So I didn't have much hope of avoiding it. So I got my first own garden when I was 4 years old and started to produce vegetables for the family, and pretty soon actually started to sell them to unfortunate relatives and neighbours.
A real entrepreneur from a very early age. So were your family commercial gardeners, or did they
not just... at all, no. We were just suburban cityites in the southern suburbs of Adelaide with very, very awful soil. It was a revolting plastic clay, and my father used to sort of put every bit of organic matter he could into the clay, and I suppose after 50 years of gardening he had something that approached a really good black soil.
Wow. Mm. Oh, he was a clever man, a good thinker.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that the Natural Resource Centre is interested in is food security. I haven't really heard that term. What does it mean?
Yeah, it just means that a region, an area, is secure in terms of the food that it has for its population. And so if you think about, for instance, the Aboriginal settlements in northern Australia, or particularly central Australia, they're not particularly food secure. There are more people living in concentrated areas, and a lot of the food has to come from somewhere else. And I guess food security means that you get an ongoing supply of good, fresh food, and it's resilient. So if something goes wrong in terms of the food supply, like a semi-trailer load of food doesn't arrive, does it mean that everyone goes hungry? Or is there actually a resilience where a lot of food's being produced locally and in the community, in their own backyards even?
So what are food deserts?
Food deserts are places, I guess, where there isn't much food security. And so it's the sort of place where you have access only to food that's brought in from elsewhere, and you don't have perhaps the choice of healthy foods that you would like. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some of the plastic packaged sort of foods really don't represent real food.
And manufactured meat.
Yeah, and there are a lot of places in the world that just rely on that sort of really, really unhealthy food. So whilst there might seem to be food all around you, it's not worth eating.
All right. So are we eating the planet away with our food choices?
Yeah, we are. In fact, the biggest single impact you or I have on the planet is the food we eat. And the reason for that is that there's huge amounts of fertilisers that are being produced and used in food production, and that has an impact on the planet through the mining and all of the burning of fossil fuels, which drives climate change. So we're sort of changing our climate. We're gobbling up land that used to have forests and farms, and replacing that with mines. And altogether, we are sort of using too much of the good water that we have available for urban consumption and industrial uses. So we're sort of gradually just chomping up those natural parts of the planet.
Oh, I see. Oh, are supermarkets the culprits? Do they blame in any way?
Yeah, I think that because supermarkets are kind of dedicated mainly to making a reasonable amount of money for their shareholders and so forth, their initial care really for the business is that, to be profitable. In order to have shops all over the place and all of the kinds of foods available all the time, a lot of it is overpackaged, and a lot of it comes from faraway places. So if we want to eat bananas in Adelaide, they've come an awfully long way, and so there's been transport involved and all sorts of refrigeration costs, and all of those kind of things really sort of hit the planet hard. Whereas if we were growing food locally, there wouldn't be that need for packaging and there wouldn't be that need for all of the storage and so forth.
And we'd never get to eat bananas?
Well, Marilyn, actually, we grow bananas on our farm. So it's perfectly feasible to grow bananas in South Australia if you have to have bananas.
Oh, but I never knew that.
On the other hand, we do have a growing environment which is unmatched in mm-hmm. terms of the diversity of food that can be grown. Our Mediterranean climate means that we can grow foods from the subtropics right through to the cool temperate areas. And so this wonderful collection of things through from, you know, guavas to, you know, the very old kind of apples that Robin Hood used to, you know, sort of eat while he was, you know, in between eating deer in the forests. Mm.
I guess a lot of families where both parents work, they both come home from work and they're both tired and neither of them feels like cooking from scratch. So that's why that's why the supermarkets provide a lot of those sort of meals.
Yeah, we're very busy, aren't we, doing things. We just have to take a deep breath and think, well, what is actually really, really important? And are all of those things that we're doing, checking our mobile phones and taking the kids to yet another kind of event, would it be better to just pause and do a bit of gardening, perhaps, and and spend a little time cooking and talking to each other?
It can be a family thing, the gardening.
Very much so, and it's terribly good for you as well in terms of your own health. Not only you're growing healthy food, you're also exercising, so it's a great occupation.
My parents were market gardeners, and I think at the end of the week, my father was sick of gardening. He just wanted to get out and play golf or do something. So when it seemed a bit strange that my father was a gardener, but I don't really garden.
Yes, I think that's absolutely so. And an awful lot of farmers just refuse to have gardens because they reckon they've been doing exactly that, spending all of that time growing things.
So farmers' markets the solution, you think?
I think they are, really. Farmers' markets are places where you can get definitely fresh local food. You can get to know the growers, so you can know, you know, who's got what sort of growing techniques and what they're growing, and they can share food preparation tips with you and that sort of thing. You also find that it helps to build community, and so we start seeing some of the waste potentially, the organic waste potentially from an urban part of the region being composted and going to the local farms and then returning to the community as food, mm-hmm. and all of that without unnecessary packaging.
Yes.
And a lot of the farmers' markets now also collaborate with organisations like OzHarvest, which is one of the food rescue organisations.
Yes, that's another term I'm learning today, food rescue.
Yeah, well, there's almost half the food that's produced is actually wasted one way or another.
That's a lot.
And so at the end of each farmer's market, up comes a little OzHarvest van and takes away any of the vegetables and fruit and those sorts of things that haven't been sold by the stallholders. And that then goes to various charities around the metro area. It all happens very quickly that, you know, it's actually distributed within 2 days. So the food's still in really good shape.
Yes, that's good. Is UCare Gawler involved in that as well?
Well, certainly there are a lot of charities involved, Anglicare and UCare and so forth. Certainly our stall at the Adelaide Showground Farmers Market, food from there goes to Anglicare, so there's it's quite a quick and quite a regional kind of thing, so we're not adding to the food mile ridiculously.
Yeah. Growing food together, now that I've got a list here, shared gardens.
Yeah, this is where you've got people who actually like gardening together, and so and a lot of people who do this. Gardening by yourself can be a bit of a lonely occupation, so a lot of people actually with their next door neighbour, you know, two doors along or something, will garden together in each other's gardens, and some gardens are going to be better for some vegetables than others. Yeah. So together, the families can kind of pool a really interesting range of vegetables and also have that lovely time gardening together.
Yeah, neighbourhood gardens.
Yeah, there's a lot of very informal kind of gardens that are set up on roadside verges and things like that, and just maintained by the surrounding population. Certainly happens in the inner city, the sort of close to the centre of the city kind of area where slightly more bohemian kind of attitude to neighbourhood exists, where there's a bit of street art and those sorts of things, and so neighbourhood gardens.
That sounds good. Land share?
Land share is a concept where a person has a piece of land which is not being utilised. There might be a person who's getting a bit old and just hasn't got the energy to use their backyard, or some people even have part of a farm which they can't use. And land share is an arrangement where I say, I'm looking for a piece. I'm a young, vibrant person. I'm looking for a piece of land to grow vegetables. And has anyone got some spare land? And then the land share kind of is hooking up with a person who is actually able to provide land and possibly water, and coming to some sort of agreement between the two about you know, how much is paid for water and all those sorts of things, and whether there's a lease involved or just a straight out sharing. And that has worked very well in the eastern states particularly. So a little bit more formal. It's something that an organisation like the Gawler Community House could kind of facilitate.
And this last one is interesting. Gorilla gardeners.
Yeah, and this is gorillas rather than gorillas.
Yeah.
It's essentially where people see that there is a vacant public space or vacant space which is just full of weeds, and really it could have something productive growing on it. It could have some fruit trees or some flowers or whatever. And being gorillas, they sort of take things into their own hands and quite often forget to ask the people who are responsible for the land whether they can put a tree there or have a little garden there.
Yes.
And sometimes they do ask, and sometimes that would be more like a land share arrangement, but the gorilla gardeners tend to kind of get in and do it.
And community gardens.
Well, they're really popular, and we've got now something like 50 community gardens in South Australia, and of course one here in Gawler at the Community House. They are run on different bases, but the wonderful thing about them is that wherever you are in the world, you can probably find a community garden near you. So, you know, particularly for young people moving around with jobs, they might find themselves in New York or Amsterdam or whatever. And if they do like gardening, they can probably get involved in a community garden quite quickly, because the community garden has all of the garden plots organised and the water supplies and, you know, legal access to land and that sort of thing. And people can just sign up for a bit of gardening together with others on a sort of a communal piece of the community garden, or actually leasing a plot for themselves and then showing that they are the greatest gardener. In actual fact, of course, community gardeners bring a lot of very, very experienced gardeners together, and they can share their tips and so forth. So someone who actually went in without ever having grown anything at all can come out after a full growing season with quite a lot of skill as a gardener because of all of the experienced people they've been gardening next to or with.
Yeah. If you started growing, what sort of money would you save, do you think?
Well, I did actually have a bit of a look at the Australian Bureau of Stats to see how much the average family spends on food per week. It's about $300, which is a lot of money. And about $50 of that spent on fruit and vegetables. And probably if you were a healthy eater, it would be more than that. So if you times that by, you know, 50-odd weeks in the year, you're talking about $2,500 plus. So that's all money that, you know, well, I'm not saying that people would grow all of the food that they wanted to eat. And we're talking about fruit and vegetables. But there's an opportunity to certainly grow a lot of the stuff. I mean, we've been sort of buying zero vegetables on our in our family for a long, long time, and so we know how very easy it is. And you only need a small area, so we're talking, you know, on a square metre, you could easily grow $50 worth of food in just a few weeks, just in a square metre. So if you said I could dedicate, say, a garden of, say, 5 metres by 2 or 3 metres, it's actually getting towards growing all the vegetables you can eat.
Yes.
Mm.
Now, there's always the question of organic or not organic.
Yeah. Growing organically is incredibly easy when your system's working well and you've sort of got all of the biodiversity working for you. So I guess if you have good biodiversity, meaning that there are lots of beneficial insects and birds in the immediate environment of the garden, you'll find that the pests have a very, really hard time. So our garden at home, we've got 2 willy wagtails that kind of pretty much live there, and they are incredible, you know, eating almost, you know, half their own weight in a day in unfortunate insects. And then there's all the different predatory insects as well, things like mud wasps, which actually come into your garden and grab hold of those green caterpillars that are eating your broccoli, and they'll actually sort of pick them up. It's sort of like one of those heavy lift helicopters taking off, and they'll actually plaster them into kind of a tomb on maybe the wall of your house or whatever, the mud wasps. And of course the caterpillar's been anaesthetised and little weeny wasps hatch out of it, having, you know, feasted on it. So there are an awful lot of predators that you can encourage by growing particular plants. For instance, the wasps, and we're not talking about the European wasp, we're talking about predatory wasps in general. They will live much longer if they have access to very shallow flowers. So things like fennel flowers, wild fennel, and Queen Anne's lace, and the leptospermums. And so you can set your garden up actually with a habitat for these predators. And once you've got that, you really don't need to use any insecticides at all. And really, for the rest, vegetables are pretty good.
Yeah.
I must talk a bit about soil, I guess, and how that can make your plants sort of more bulletproof in terms of diseases. And the main thing that goes wrong is people forget to keep their soil fertile. And there's kind of 2 things to that. One is, if there's lots of organic material in the soil, lots of carbon in the soil, that's kind of like a supermarket for the roots. And so vegetable roots can get down and they can take whatever nutrients they want from the soil easily, whereas if there's not a lot of carbon or organic material in the soil, then they really sort of can look very kind of lackluster and fail to produce good, you know, healthy looking fruits and so on. So I think that's one of the main things. So a really good organic compost is great.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that, for instance, mites, which I know red-legged earth mites are often quite a problem on lettuces and things like that. If you've got predatory mites living in, say, the mulch in your garden, they'll actually nail them. So organic is really a system where you just don't need to use any of the toxins. It's not so much magic potions that are organic, you know, boiling down all of these herbs and things. It's much more creating an ecosystem that looks after itself.
So who can help a person learn that?
Oh, well, there are lots and lots of courses. And certainly the Natural Resource Centre has a lot of short courses.
Where is the Gawler Natural Resource
Centre? It's 8 Adelaide Road, so I don't know if any Gawler people probably would know where Hyden Partners is just just before you hit the main Gawler Bridge, and it's right opposite that on the side road there. So opposite Mitre 10. Sorry, I'm putting in a lot of plugs here.
That's all right.
It will actually next year be moving to, I think it will be moving anyway, to the current TAFE building.
All right. So is that open like...
Yeah, just go in any time, and we have... a desk and a lot of information and displays and so forth. And the centre runs workshops. So if people wanted to, for instance, learn how to build a raised bed or a wicking bed, they do workshops on
that. A wicking bed?
Yeah, a wicking bed's kind of like a raised bed. So you think of a raised bed as being pretty much a enclosure.
Yes.
Sitting on the ground.
Corrugated iron.
Yeah, often corrugated iron or something like that. A wicking bed actually has a waterproof bottom in it and coming up the side, so it actually holds an amount of water in the bottom and that water wicks up like a candle would, so that the vegetables only have to be watered kind of every few days. You don't need to be out there watering every day. And it means that the plants really don't have any water stress at all. But in South Australia, being a eucalyptus-rich state, an awful lot of people have got gums in or around their gardens. And they're very hard to get on with. gardens and eucalypts really don't mix. And so instead of actually digging a garden near a eucalyptus tree, you may as well forget that, because they will just take all of the water and nutrients, put in a wicking bed or a raised bed that doesn't have a permeable bottom. So the roots of the eucalypt just can't get into that garden.
Yeah.
And people who've been trying desperately to garden for years find that suddenly they can actually have a really good garden, whether it be flowers or vegetables or both.
Yeah.
It's more difficult with fruit trees, but you can get dwarf fruit trees now, which will produce quite big crops in big containers.
Why are organic vegetables dearer than non-organic?
Yeah, on the whole, I guess we organic people pay a bit more in terms of labour. So if you're a commercial grower, so we don't just use herbicides to take out a whole of the plants that are wanting to grow. We do that physically, and we don't use conventional fertilisers, which are relatively cheap, I guess. They're mined as minerals from various places in the world and then converted into freely available kind of nutritive forms by industrial processes. And whilst that all seems, you know, really nice and cheap, it's not feeding your plants with a balanced diet. It's like... if you were just had a high nitrogen fertilizer, it would be like a person just drinking milkshakes all day, every day. It doesn't give you the diversity of nutrients that the plants need, and it also disrupts the kind of general ecology of the soil. So where an organic grower would be using a compost, which is essentially made from waste organic material from one source or another, often food waste from the city or from the green bins collected around the suburbs, those sorts of things. That's a much more balanced diet.
I see. You've done all this wonderful work with vegetables. How do we go with the cooking of them? Like, boil them madly and...
Yeah, not too madly, yeah. Humans, you know, sort of emerge from the forest where we ate a lot of berries and also... fungi, like all sorts of mushrooms, not too many magic mushrooms, and then caught probably the occasional small animal and consumed that. And then we've come out onto the grasslands much more prehistorically and got into the whole business of grains, which tend to occupy those open areas of the landscape. So what I'm sort of hinting at is that we did eat a lot of our food raw.
Yes.
An awful lot of it. The cooking came later.
Yeah.
And so we should really eat as much of our food raw as is sensible. Now, there are some things that are, you know, going to be pretty tough. And in fact, cooking does help digestion. For instance, with chickpeas, you can actually get much more nutrition out of a chickpea once it has been boiled. So minimum cooking, but yes, cooking. And the good thing is that there are some really nice resources. The Gawler Neighbourhood House runs cooking classes on Wednesdays.
That's called Community House now.
Sorry.
So people might go to where the Neighbourhood House used to be.
Sorry, Community House,
yes.
Yes,
it's called Community House these days.
And it is Scheibner Terrace?
Yes.
Yeah, so where the old ETSA station was, kind of near the ford over the Gawler River. And so that's one way of doing it, to actually be learning with other people. And the other is that there are some pretty good online resources. And one that I really like is a government site called Eat for Health, all one word.
Yes.
That's absolutely excellent. And there's quite a good one, which is called Cook Smarts, which gives you lots of really great recipes. And I guess it's a matter of keeping that balance of protein and carbohydrate and minerals and vitamins.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where organic food is also a bit better. We tend to get about 25% more vitamins and minerals in organic food because of the way that the plant has acquired everything it needs in the growing period, rather than being pumped up with nitrogen fertilisers and too much water.
To find out more about sustainable living, people can Google Gawler, NRC, and I tried that this morning to see if it worked, and it does. It shows you what the group can offer, so you just Google that and a list comes up. And I was quite amazed at the variety of help that they offer. Heaps of stuff.
Yeah, it's a terrific arrangement where you've got the Community Natural Resource Centre combined in one space with the government, a state government natural resources
centre. So is there a paid person there all the time?
Yes, yeah, we have a coordinator and we have three volunteers, and we work hand in hand with the state government officers, so the Department of Environment, Water and Natural Resources people. And I guess we cross over quite a lot and help each other a lot.
Mm.
The community NRC is more, I guess, interested in individuals in the community rather than that so much the landscape.
And so if you want help with your chickens, for instance, you could go there.
We have chicken experts, yes. Chickens and worms and gardening and recycling your waste plastics, how you could perhaps set up a grey water system, really how to live softly on the planet.
Yes, it's a wonderful organisation. And Graham, I thank you so much today for coming and sharing it all with us.
Thanks very much for having me.